the occasion of this text, the children of Israel have come out of Egypt, and Moses has ascended the mountain. He's meeting with God. This text takes place actually before he comes down, and the people are given to idolatry, and Aaron has helped the people to build a golden calf. But God is directing Moses in these days, and he's guiding him in how he wants the tabernacle to be built. And to Moses, the word says that I've called by name Bezaleel, the son of Uri, there in verse 2, the son of Hur, the tribe of Judah. I filled him with the Spirit of God, and wisdom and understanding and knowledge and all manner of workmanship. Basically, this man Bezaleel has been gifted by God to do a special work for God. And that work has to do with the tabernacle. It has to do with the instruments of worship for the people of God. God has skilled this man, given him skills, gifts, talents. If we were looking at this from the New Testament point of view, we'd say God has given him spiritual gifts. And this man is skilled to do what Moses cannot do, and he's skilled to do what Aaron is not equipped to do. You remember, Aaron was gifted and called to be a speaker, to actually be a mouthpiece for Moses. Moses, on the other side, is the leader. God calls him the meekest man upon the face of the earth. In all of the figures of the Old Testament, there's none greater than Moses. When the Jewish people consider the Old Testament scriptures, greater than David, greater than the prophet Isaiah, is this man, Moses. And yet, here is a task. Moses, with all of these leadership abilities, he can't do this. Aaron, with his ability to speak before Pharaoh, he can't do this. And God has gifted this man. And this man and his gifts come from God just as certain as Moses' gift and Aaron's gift. This man is gifted from God just as certain as they are called, he's gifted. His gifts are given to him by God. His gifts have to do with the material. They have to do with the physical labor. They have to do with the ability to do things with his hands. This man is going to build the Ark of the Covenant. This man is going to build the altars. He's going to build the laver. He's going to build the candlestick. He's going to deal and bring with the oil. And he's given a man to help him who's going to be gifted with the cloths, with the curtains. But basically, you look at Moses, he's a spiritual leader. You look at Aaron, he's the one talking. But this man, he labors with his hands. He labors with the gifts of wisdom. With his hands. He's gifted of God. He's called of God. His call from God is just as sure as their call. His gift from God is just as sure as theirs. And his gifts are necessary. There's going to be a tabernacle. Somebody besides Moses is going to have to build it. If there's going to be the Ark of the Covenant, Aaron and Moses don't know how to do that. But this man, Bezaleel, he does know how. And the work that he's going to do is extremely important work. Just think about it. This tabernacle is going to be the place where they offer the sacrifices. He's going to build literally the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat upon it, where the blood of that lamb is going to be offered every year for the sins of the people. They're going to build that curtain that shuts off the holy place from the most holy place. You realize This man is building an Ark of the Covenant, and he's putting it in a room that he's not even going to be allowed to go in, not even one time in his lifetime. Aaron, the priest, the others of the priesthood, they'll go in there. And they'll go in there for centuries. You think about it. All of the great men of God and women of God, they'll come to this tabernacle. And this tabernacle will be the center of worship for centuries. This is around 1500 years before Christ. The temple will be built somewhere between 900 and 1000 years before Christ. This thing that he's doing for the next 500-600 years is going to be the center of Israel's worship. And the greatest people of faith down through those centuries of time will gather at this tabernacle. God's called this man. God's gifted this man. And what he is to do is very, very important. Fact is, listen, what he's going to do will outlive Moses. It'll outlive Aaron. It'll outlive their descendants. It'll go on and on. This is the work of God. Bezalel is the man chosen, and he's the man gifted. God's always had a person to do the work he needs to do. And I pray tonight it'd help us to see what is the work for us. What is it he wants us to do? What's my place? What's my place in the kingdom? When God needed an ark to save the human race, he chose a man called Noah. You know, the Bible speaks of the patience of Job, but you have to think that Noah had to also be about the most patient man there ever was. Preached over 100 years, built an ark, nobody was converted. His own family is all that ever ended up in that ark. Yet God gifted Noah, skilled him, chose him. On the other side, when the temple is going to be built, God refuses to let David do it. And he chooses Solomon. And he gives Solomon the wisdom to lead in the building of the temple. And on the other hand, when he needs someone to kill a giant, he trains a boy with a sling and a stone. He puts him as a shepherd and trains him to hit targets like lions and bears. And the day comes as a teenager when he stands before a giant. You say, a sling and a stone and a spiritual gift? I'll guarantee you that day it was. The ability to sling a stone that day was a mighty spiritual gift in the hand of God. He takes a man like Amos. I don't know why he took him. He was a herder of sheep. In fact, that's what he said. He said, I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. I'm just a shepherd, a herdsman. And yet God spoke to several nations through him. God seeks to bring about a prophet. One of the greatest prophets of the Old Testament is Samuel. One of the few men in the Bible that you just can't find flaws in. And yet you know as well as I do, the key to Samuel's life was his mother Hannah. Hannah's whole life was wrapped up in God's plan in the life of Samuel. God took a woman that knew how to pray, that knew how to seek God, a woman that pleaded with God, and a woman that made a commitment to God, and a woman that could be trusted with that commitment. And he placed within her hand Samuel, and she gave Samuel to God. She brought him to this tabernacle. All the way through, it's the Bible way. God's always had a person. Now, we don't put an emphasis upon beauty. America puts too much emphasis upon that, and I fear some of our young girls, if they're not careful, they get caught up in the vanity of that. But I will tell you this, if God made you extremely pretty, he probably made you that way for a reason. In the Old Testament, you find a woman that was really beautiful, and God used her beauty to bring her to be the queen. And in her day, she saved the nation of Israel. Esther the queen. I don't know if you think of beauty as a spiritual gift. And I know there was much more to her than beauty. But God has purpose. in an age where there's too much emphasis upon that, we can see that there was a time in the Bible where God actually used beauty. Not only beauty outwardly, but beauty in her character. I thought about Ruth. Ruth is a woman that was used to save the nation of Israel also. The line of Jesus she saved. And what happened in her life? She married Boaz. What made her so draw attention, Boaz's attention? A couple of things. One is her beauty. But the other thing was, she was a servant. She had the reputation of serving. You know who Boaz was? He was a workman. He was a man who admired that. God brought all those things together and she saves the people. Well, you can go on and on. Little boy in the New Testament, 2 loaves and a few fish. And God uses that. What was in his hands? What did he have? The apostles? The core of all of the apostles, they were fishermen. They were people who knew something about what it was to fish. And Jesus said, I'm going to make you to be fishers of men. But also in his plan, he had men like Matthew. Matthew was equipped more so than all the rest to write the book of Matthew and give us that great account of the life of Christ. The apostle Paul, what was he? He was a scholar. He was more than a scholar, but there's no question. God, the apostle Paul may, and many people consider that he has his mind is the greatest since the time of Christ. Tremendous mind. Now I know that he wrote by inspiration of the scriptures, but at the same time, God used his scholarship for what he wanted to do in his life. I'm just saying, here is this Bezalel. He's not a Moses. He's not an Aaron. You wonder what he could do with a sling and a stone? Probably not much. Even if you put a jawbone in his hand, he wouldn't know what to do with it, like Samson did. But I'll tell you this. You put gold in his hand. You put silver in his hand. You put precious metal in his hand. And he knows how to take those things and make something to the glory of God with them. You put wood in his hands. And he can build an altar that will be used for centuries. He has an ability that the people of God need. He has an ability that the cause of God needs. That is an ability that God's given him. An ability that God sovereignly gave him, no doubt from birth. From very birth, he was equipped for the day that this would come. Bezalel takes his place in the Bible to tell us that the work of God is vast. The work of God is wide. The work of God, there's the behind the scenes work. What the people knew of Bezalel, was there ever a day to honor a man like that? I don't know. But the fact is, he has a significant place in the work of God. Now, if we'll use this passage to define spiritual gifts, if we'll look at it, here's what we'll conclude. And I hope that you'll get a hold of this. A spiritual gift is any God-given ability given for the furtherance of the work of God. Whatever it is, a spiritual gift is the God-given ability that God's given each of us, that he has given it to us in order that the work of God be advanced. Now, listen to me. The person that's doing the will of God is the person that's using his or her God-given ability to further the work of God. You say, what is the will of God for my life? Well, I'd ask you, what is it God's put in your hands? Have you ever stopped to evaluate what you can do? Have you evaluated what God's given you? Probably, if most of us aren't going to write books. And if we do, we be better off if we had a friend to tell us, don't do that. Please, don't do that. Most of us are not going to do much great work as far as art. And best to realize that. I've known many people down through the years, I wish that somebody would have been kind enough to tell them that their ministry wasn't singing. And you probably have seen some people that you wish somebody would tell them that their ministry isn't preaching. And I appreciate that, and I can understand that. And many's the time I wish that wasn't my ministry. This man, though, can do what someone else can't do. And there's something for each and every one of us to do. Every person, according to 1 Corinthians 12, every person is gifted by the Holy Spirit to do something in the ministry for the profit of all, every one of us. We're not all the same, thank God. By design, we're not the same, and we can appreciate that. We don't think the same. At this stage in life, it's taken me a long time to come to this stage in life, but I want to know, what did my wife think about it? You say, when did you start thinking like that? Oh, about a year or so ago. No. Hopefully before then, but honestly, many's the time I've been in service, and I say, I wish you'd have been there. I wish you'd have been sitting there. Because I realize she doesn't think like I do, and she doesn't see things like I do, and she's got a different perspective. And I need that. Every person's gifted in some way or another. If you want to read the Bible to see spiritual gifts, read Romans 12, read 1 Corinthians 12, read Ephesians 4. Those are the three main passages in the Bible. Now what you're going to find when you read those passages is this, that none of those passages list the same number of gifts, that each of them are different. They're different in their emphasis. For instance, 1 Corinthians is emphasizing the beginnings of the church and the miracle gifts. Ephesians is emphasizing the role of the pastor and the teacher and the missionary in the church. It starts with the prophet, the apostles and prophets, but it's coming down to show how God has designed the pastor to teach the people in order that the people be equipped to do the work of God. Romans deals with various gifts, the gifts of help, the gifts of ruling, the gifts of giving. And we find in the Bible the gifts of faith. I think that's in the 1 Corinthians passage. They're various and sundry. And here's what I would tell you. None of those lists are complete. And I think if you put all three lists together, they're not complete. It's like the fruit of the Spirit. You say there's 9 fruits of the Spirit. No, there's 9 example fruits of the Spirit. There's 9 examples of what spiritual fruit looks like. But there's much more fruit than that. And there's many more gifts that are in the Bible. Times change and they call for different things. There are people in this room that have teaching abilities. And it's a wonderful gift. In fact, this man, if you look in the 35th chapter, he had teaching abilities. That God not only gave him this ability, but gave him the ability to teach others to do what he did. Not everybody that could work with their hands would be a good teacher, but this man was. And there are people in this room. You're important. Your gift is important. It's the gift of teaching. But listen, it's a mistake to say that everybody should be able to stand before the crowd. Sometimes I've been asked to a meeting. In fact, when I went to North Carolina, he just kept pursuing me about my wife teaching. My wife teaching all the women in the class while we were there in North Carolina. And I kept saying, she doesn't do that. My wife doesn't teach. She wasn't called to the ministry. She's my wife. And being my wife does not equal standing in front of people. And even, I told this brother this, and I told him, and I think I'd be careful, he might hear this. Anyway, a memory lapse. So I get there, and he's asking me again. And I'm saying, no, she's not going to do that. But I'll be glad you bring all of them in the auditorium. I'll teach them. And that's what we did. We taught the families there about raising children, what little bit we know from the scriptures. But listen, A person, if they're not gifted to that, we should not seek to put them where their calling and their gifting is not. When I was a boy, on Wednesday nights, the pastor had different men lead the service. And as I sat back there, it was a real time of suffering. And I was just a boy. I didn't know what was going on, but what would happen is men would get up and they did not know what to say. And invariably, they would start talking and start crying. And I'm not despising that. But in our ministry, that hasn't been our approach. If you came from that background, that's just not our approach. We'll find out who's gifted. But there are others that are gifted in administration. Some of our deacons, or all of them, I'd say, are gifted in this area. And I thank the Lord for that. I certainly am not gifted in that area. There's a certain amount you have to do, I suppose, because you're a pastor. But the pastor takes the oversight. Doesn't mean he has to do all that. Moses had the oversight, but this man, he did what he did. Can you imagine Moses trying to tell this man how to build the altar, how to build the Ark of the Covenant, not the one you get in to save yourself from the flood. Or telling this man how to build the candlestick and be like... Somebody was telling me the other day, it may have been one of you. I'm trying to remember who was telling me that they were with somebody and that person was doing some work for them. And they kept saying, "What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?" And the person finally said, "Listen, what I want you to do is stand right there." And so he stood him over there and did the work and then got to something else and said, "Now what do you want me to do now? Stand right over there." I don't remember who told me that, but that is so good. He wasn't rude, whoever it was. Just move the person out of the way, because that person couldn't do that. So here's this man. He's not a Moses. He's not an Aaron. But they're not a Bezalel either. And the best thing they can do is let each do what he does. And realize that's the way of God's work, how it works. That the gift of helps in the Bible. A tremendous gift. And you think about things that you might do in the work of the Lord in present day. In the psalm, we find the doorkeeper. Like to be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord. A doorkeeper. You have gifts of music. There again, I've seen people, and I think I may have already said this, but this is worse than speaking. People who can't sing. And preachers are the worst of the bunch right there. Think they can sing when they can't sing. Now, Brother Glenn's a preacher. He can sing too. That's fine. But think about a ministry, the possibilities. We're living in a day of electronics. We need people gifted in electronics around here. This is the day of internet. We need people gifted in internet. We have a website. I'll be honest, we don't have a clue about it. All it is to me is a connection to sermon audio so people can hear our sermons. But I realize that we're missing the boat right there. Do you know, since we've been on sermon audio, it's been the single best thing to bring families into our church. All you folks that are here tonight, you're here because of sermon audio. Brother Ben and Sister Lisa heard us on sermon audio. That ministry, that's a tremendous ministry. And I'll guarantee you, we need a Bezalel. Right now, we need a Bezalel. The work that goes on. Think about Brother David back here. And he's sitting back there in the hot seat because we say, "Stay back there. We don't want you moving in case we have problems." But I praise the Lord for Brother David. And what he's doing is so important. We do radio in Camden. Every Thursday we have to get that out so that they'll run it on Friday. And I think, we need somebody gifted that knows how to put it together. All they've got to do is take sermons, break them down, put them on the internet, and they'll take them, break them down, send a lead to the radio station. They take it all off the internet. But that's so important. That ministry. Somebody that's gifted, like a Bezalel, that wants to do that sort of thing. Our brother Clint is coming. He actually speaks on television. And he's nice looking enough to be on television. And we might could use him locally. I don't know what we could do. You know, a nice looking fellow like that. Dress him up. I found it interesting the other day. I hate to even mention this. It kills me to mention this. Because it's hurt me already that the knowledge has got around about this brother. When Brother Stan came to this church, I was the only one who knew him. And in a sense, what I mean is, he's coming out to my house every week fixing things. Next thing I know, other people know about him. Brother Moore over here. Best thing you can do is just stay off your lawnmower. That would be the best thing for me and Stan and everybody. Then I hear he's over at other people's houses. And I'm saying, that's no good. And he told me the other day, he believed that was his ministry. And I thought, that's so good. Willing to help and willing to do. And I hate to tell you that because some of you will be calling him. Oh, it's bad. But a person can do that, they do what they do, can do to help somebody. And I tell you this, it relieves me. And I want to do what I can do. And I want everyone here, just find out what you can do. There's so much that could be done. I think about mission work, and we think about missionaries. Did you know a big part of missionary work is translating? You know what that requires? That requires a scholar. Translating does. Our building, that requires builders. The actual speaking ministry, preaching ministry of the missionary, that's part of a team. It takes so many people. I think about it, if you could think about what it takes to operate a college, to train preachers and train missionaries and all the people and this work here. And I don't know what your place is altogether. I hear about things and I say, oh, that person could do this. But here's the thing. What we need to see is what our ability is to recognize the ability that God has given us for His purposes and use them accordingly. There's some of us, our hands, that's not God's gift to us. But there's others. There's some of us, I know my gift is not phone. It has nothing to do with phones because I don't like them. And if you got to call me, fine, just call me. I'll answer it. But people say, well, he doesn't like talking on the phone. I wonder, how do they know that? It comes across somehow. But you know something? In our time, somebody that knows how to speak to people on the phone could be used tremendously to call people, to encourage people, to try to use it in the ministry. There are people that can write and send cards. They have the gift of encouragement. And people need to get a card from them. And I'm sorry, I think I should be better at that. I should be better at encouraging people. But some of you, down through the years, we've had people in our church. I think about Miss Diane Garrett. Probably some of you at some time or another got a card from that dear lady. And she sent them out all the time. We buy them. Listen, we buy the cards. We'll buy the stamps. If you feel like, hey, that's my ministry, that's what I could do, we'll be glad to do it. And we're not going to pay your phone bill. And we're not going to pay your internet bill. I just want to be careful you don't go too far with that. But to think about, what can I do? The Bible speaks of us as a body, and Christ is the head. And not everybody's the hand. Not everybody's the feet. They're different parts. And it's all of us working together. What I was saying this morning, to love people and to help people and to seek to bring them to Christ. Gift of mercy. Some people have this tremendous gift of mercy. And they're just moved with compassion. That's from God. And God intends you to use that. Some of The folks are givers. The gift of giving. And they just want to give of themselves, and they're willing to give of what they have. All right, use that. Whatever. Here's the thing. See, a spiritual gift is that which God has given us. An ability that God has given us. You may think of it as a natural ability. I'm going to say that's fine. Because I'm going to say before the world began, God knew you. Before you were ever born, God knew what He needed. And He put it in you. The Apostle Paul, by divine sovereignty, he was the scholar he was. This man, Bezalel, I imagine as a boy, his mother and father found him working with trinkets and always doing something. And he was amazed. This isn't something that just happened when he was a grown man. I don't think that. But I think what they saw as a natural ability, God saw as something He put in this man for the day to come to do this very important work. And you have it. We all have it to some degree. Personality. God gives you one of them personalities. One of those, you know, not afraid to talk to anybody. Don't you think God gave you that for a special reason? People like you naturally and they're open to you. Would you use that? Use that for the opportunity to talk to them. But see, the thing is, the will of God for you and for me is to use the ability that God has given me and God has given you to further the work. And it's essential then that somehow I come to know what my gifts and abilities are. And to realize there's some things I cannot do. There's some things I'm just not good at. That doesn't mean I'm not going to try some things. But there are some times I realize this is for someone else to do. You say, you're lazy. You could learn the computer better. You're probably right. But I'll be honest with you. I don't mind taking a book of theology and spend hours and hours and hours or even days reading it. 10 minutes to learn a computer program? That's not me. Say, you're just lazy. Maybe you're right. But I tend to think that God called me for a certain purpose and He put an interest in my heart and a gift. And I think there's somebody in this room that's got the other. I know that. And so, if there's someone that we discover, and they may themselves believe they've got this gift, then we want to use it. I remember talking to Neil. And Neil didn't feel like preaching publicly was what he was gifted to. He said, I'll do it, preacher, if you want me to do it. I said, no, I'm glad to hear that. Because I want you to work within the abilities that God gives you and what you're comfortable with. See, I'm worried about letting him preach, and he's worried about, I hope he doesn't let me preach. I'm able to work that. But his gift is needed in this ministry. And we have to determine, and we look at it. What can you do? God said to Moses, I can't do that. The Lord said, what's in your hand? He said, it's a rod. He said, throw it down. He throws it down, it becomes a serpent. He said, now pick it back up. It becomes a rod. And forever there's a lesson to us. What's in your hand? What is it that you can do? What has God gifted you for? And in one sense, I would say this to you. That ought to be the pursuit of your life right now. To find out. Find out what is your place. Find out. Oswald Chambers said that one individual life may be a priceless value to God's purposes. And yours may be that life. You may be Bezalel. In fact, I'm pretty sure in this crowd is Bezalel for for whatever the need is that God has given you, find it. Use it. Find out what you like to do. Find out what you're good at doing. Find out what needs to be done, perhaps. And find out if that isn't what God wants you to do.